Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you, as always, live from the back of Roberta's Pizza in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn. You are tuned into the Farm Report, and I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. And today we're going to be talking about homesteading. Homesteading is a lifestyle based on self-sufficiency with a long history in the U.S. Historically, homesteading has been used by government entities to help populate and make habitable places that were previously little desired areas. But what does that mean in the modern time? We're going to find out a little bit by speaking with some of Mother Earth News's 2013 Modern Homesteader Award winners. And first up, we are on the line with Gloria Varney. Gloria, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you on. So congratulations on your designation as a 2013 Homesteader of the Year.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to start out by giving folks a little bit of a sense of your background. Now, you and your husband own the first certified organic dairy in Maine. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So how did you guys get into the dairy business?
We bought the farm. This is my husband's family farm that we bought back in 1986. And at the time, it was a vacant farm. His parents had sold the dairy. And we came on with the idea of doing something with the farm. My husband, you know, had some heifers still, and we were renting our facility for a little bit. And I was still finishing my college career and in community health education with a secondary major in nutrition and exercise physiology. So I was pretty much off the farm for about 3 years while I graduated and worked in that field. And then back, it was in 1990, I quit my job and came back to the farm just knowing that there had to be a better way of teaching health and nutrition and overall well-being than in a classroom or in an office doing one-on-one consults. So from there, it's flourished. And what I tell people today is, you know, the store is in a 30 by 60 post and beam, you know, refurbished what used to be an old dairy barn. And I tell them they're coming into my classroom. It offers them an opportunity to learn about where their food's coming from. If they have any questions about, you know, any of the animals and our practices on vegetables and animals, they can, you know, we're here on premise to ask, and they can go see for themselves. And, you know, the cafe offers that opportunity to taste the difference. And so it's just flourished into my lifestyle.
That's excellent. I'm curious, you know, so I'm looking at, you know, the Wikipedia definition for homesteading. And, you know, it defines it here as a lifestyle, as I said at the beginning, based on self-sufficiency. And I'm wondering, you know, as someone who I think self-identifies as a homesteader, you know, what does that mean for you, and kind of where do you kind of draw lines or make rules for yourself around that idea of being self-sufficient?
So the idea for me was, right from the beginning, you know, I'll back up a little bit. I grew up I'm one of 10 children, and we raised all of our food, had a huge garden, and we raised all of our meats. And so when I came here to Nizinskaw and started having my own children, you know, farming is a vulnerable industry first and foremost. And so, you know, there's always I've kind of had this phrase, this what if, you know, my kids hear it all the time. You know, what if we run out of power? What if there's no grocery stores that we can go to for our food? You know, all those what if questions. And to me, homesteading works to answer those questions. So for me, it's I need to make sure that I have food put away, whether it's in the canned food or dry cured meats or frozen foods, and a root cellar full of food, because, you know, those are your mainstays, food and water. And so I want to make sure that I'm able to put that and create that for me and my family. And that, to me, is self-sufficiency and homesteading and, you know, and honing on some skills that, you know, if I can't buy flour, do I have the grains to back up to create flour to make bread? So it's all of those what-if questions that I work to have answered, and I try to promote that to people who come here, you know, because besides being a classroom where they come in, they get to see, taste, buy, ask questions, visually on our farm, we offer opportunities for people to see and get ideas that they can take home with them and maybe start implementing something on their in their home. And it doesn't have to be a farm, and you don't need lots of acreage to create food. You know, that can be created by supporting CSAs or knowing where your farmer is in your community. And what can a community do to make sure that they have food security by supporting this farmer? So I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it definitely does, and it makes a lot of sense. And, well, so on that, I'm kind of thinking, you know, we live in a world, especially here in New York City, where I'm calling you from, full of, you know, iPhones and iPads and yep. MacBooks and, you know, the kind of swirling all around us of, yep. you know, screens and technology. And then, you know, kind of more broadly, you know, as we're moving to a more and more kind of digital world, I'm wondering yep. how some of those advances in technology do or don't find a place in your home, and do you have suspicion of them, or do you embrace them? And if so, you know, to what extent?
I do embrace them for simply because it allows me to see what other people, other countries, other states are doing, what they're looking at, some trends, what are people interested in, and it gives me some ideas of how I can further be a better mentor, and also maybe open a few more doors, you know, to bring in internships or to communicate with people like yourself, you know, to just educate. And hopefully, you know, when we're done here, that you'll go home and you'll say, okay, well, what if I didn't have my iPad or my iPhone or, you know, because for some people, that brings on a panic. For me, not having enough food put aside for me, myself and my family of five children, that's what brings on a panic for me. So I absolutely embrace, you know, all technology because it's part of my business, and it helps move my business forward and keeps me in touch. So,
yeah, that makes sense. And it's always funny to me. I mean, I grew up in a very rural community in Northeast Michigan, and as such have a lot of, you know, basic kind of preservation and lifestyle skills from, you know, yep. hunting and fishing to preserving and canning. And it's always striking to me, the skill set is, you know, what's transferable when you move from a rural environment to an urban environment and vice versa. And I know we're seeing definitely here in Brooklyn in particular, a real explosion of interest in learning some more of those skills and almost a fear that those traditions and that craft is being lost. And I think the technology offers a really interesting opportunity for you to kind of share and communicate, you know, what you know with a much broader audience, and then also to create a record of how those things happen, how they're done. And so that's exciting to me. I'm curious from a, you know, when we're looking at, you know, making a living and kind of paying taxes and how you, you know, have both the financial security and the land security, but also the I guess I said it already, the financial security, where, what role kind of, you know, having a consistent income stream, how that might be different for someone with a focus on homesteading would be than for someone who maybe has a 9-to-5 and is taking home a salary and is looking to kind of purchase or bring in all of the goods they need on a day-to-day basis. I wonder if you can just talk about that a little bit.
So if I hear you clearly, you're asking about how somebody who's working a 9-to-5 can try to work towards having food security at their home.
Well, that, and then also for you and your family, like, what role does an earned income play in your kind of overall security?
It's a big part. My standard of living is probably different than most. I don't put a lot of emphasis on, you know, acquisitions. Everything that we create or make goes right back into the farm. You know, that's our investment, and that continues to flourish and create more revenue for us. But in terms of, you know, financial security, the organic dairy really was a stepping stone for us as the first organic dairy in the state. It's really what allowed us to stay in this business. And but moving forward, you know, that has its ups and downs too. And I think to answer your question, I have to have a fluctuating lifestyle because our income fluctuates, both on the store end and the dairy end, and our expenses can also fluctuate. And unfortunately, in the dairy industry or the ag industry, you know, when our cost of production goes up, we can't transfer that over to the buyer. And so because we can't do that, we're always looking for ways to build more revenue, and sometimes that's through the store, and which is why, going back to why electronics and, you know, the iPad and Facebook is always important, because it allows us to continue to stay up on top of what the trends are. So, you know, it's a business, and it's an ever-changing and always exciting and keeps us on our toes.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, we are just about out of time, but before we go, I wanted to just give you an opportunity. I know that you do work with regards to anti-GMO legislation, and I'm wondering if there's anything in particular that you've been working on recently that you'd like to share with our listeners before we are out of time.
I'm working on, which correlates with the non-GMO, with bees. I'm working on a project with a woman by the name of Nancy Homan, and for some who are familiar with animal communicators, you know, and believe in it, or, you know, I'm working with her on a year-long project with my bees as a form of communication to see what's bothering them, or if there's things that we can do to change. And so it's been an interesting project so far. We've been into it for 6 months, and the communication that's coming forward is pretty interesting. And some of it is about what we're putting on our crops and the pesticides and herbicides and what they cannot absolutely handle. So that's another project I'm working on, as well as just encouraging more and more people to look at agriculture, support local, know where your food's coming from, not to assume anything just because the label says this or that, and to ask questions.
Gloria, if folks want to come up for a workshop or get in touch, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Right on my my website, www.nazinskafarm.com. They can like us on Facebook, and we've got everything right on there, and our email's there too.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be in touch again soon, I hope.
Thank you.
Again, for folks, that's the Nazinskot is Nezinscot. So take a peek at that and get signed up for some home studying classes. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be on the line with another award winner from this year's Mother Earth News Star Modern Homesteaders. So hang tight.
You're listening to Ball of Flame Shoot Fire. This one's called Bayou. Stay tuned for more from the Farm Report. Program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
Excellent. We are back. You are tuned into the Farm Report, and we are talking about homesteading, lifestyles of self-sufficiency, and we are on the line with another homesteader of the year, Dawn Combs. Dawn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Erin.
So lovely to have you on. I want to start by giving folks a little bit of a sense of your background. Now, you and your partner operate Mockingbird Meadows, which is a medicinal CSA program. Is that right?
We are an herb and honey farm, and we focus on the Hippocrates quote, let your food be your medicine and your medicine your food. So I formulate in honey. I'm an herbalist and a botanist.
Wow. So you guys do the production, like you grow on site and then you kind of, can you break that down a little bit for me? Like where, I'm like, and then in my mind you make little tinctures and magical pots of things that make me feel better, but I feel like maybe that's not quite accurate.
You're going in the right direction. We're a little different. We do homestead, and so we're growing our own food, and we really believe in self-sufficiency, and that's a big message of our farm, is empowering people to take charge of their health. And we do that by raising our own bees and the honey that we use as a base for all of our formulations. And we do also raise medicinal herbs on the farm, and we're United Plant Savers Botanical Sanctuary and a bee sanctuary, and we work all of that stuff together to make medicinal preparations for people.
So can you give me an example of what type of kind of ailments or inflictions that you guys commonly produce things for that, you know, people use on a regular basis?
With our honey spreads, we have something called Honey Z, which is a sleep tonic, and we have something for immune support, which is our Immunibe. We have things, our specialty on the farm is men's and women's endocrine and reproductive health, and so we have a men's and a women's vitality. We do about 13 different honey spreads, and they actually, instead of formulated, like you were saying, the tinctures and the pills and things like that, I formulate in the honey. So they're delicious, they're easy for everybody in your family to take, and we believe you should eat your medicine, not take it.
So would it be like spreading that on a piece of toast or eating it like out of the jar with a spoon?
I formulate them to be delicious enough to eat them on the spoon, but we we do suggest anything that isn't actively heating or boiling so you don't kill the live honey, that raw honey. But we have people who put it in their oatmeal and put it in tea and spread it on crackers. It just runs the gamut.
And how did you get involved in kind of the homesteading lifestyle? Is it something or an environment that you grew up in or that you came to later in life?
I grew up on my parents were Mother Earth News folks, and so I grew up on that magazine, and we were composting, and we were growing a lot of our own food. I did not live on a farm by any means, but I was taught to respect the land, to respect the soil, to grow your own food, to put back into the soil. So I always had that as a background. I went to college and got my botany degree, and that's where I got my interest in the phytochemical applications in the plants, how we use things for medicine, and it kind of all then went together. My background and my interests formed what we have today.
Now, when we were speaking with one of your fellow award recipients earlier in the program, I was asking her about what role technology did or didn't play in her life and how she perceived it, if she had suspicion of that or embraced it, and to what extent. And I would posit the same question to you.
Well, I came from a corporate life where I supported a bank's network platform and all their online banking. So I was very involved in it for quite a large part of my career, and I tried to step away from it and come back to the land. In some ways, I do try and stay away from technology of that point, but if you're running a business in this day and age, you can't stay away from it. You have to have some connections into the social networking and having your foot in the world, I guess. But on our farm, we don't focus on technology. We don't have TV. We don't have a cable package. We try and be outside. We don't give our kids a computer or games or anything like that to make them dependent on it. I guess maybe that's a great way for me to formulate my answer. We live with it. We use it in its proper form where it is. We are the masters of it. We do not become its slaves.
That makes a lot of sense. Can you tell me the United Plant Savers Sanctuary? What does that mean?
United Plant Savers is an organization that well-known herbalist Rosemary Gladstar started, and it was a recognition on her part that we are harvesting a lot of endangered herbs, endangered plants. So ginseng, golden seal are just a couple to name the few. We are over-harvesting them because we need them, and it is fine for us to use them, but it's an organization that's teaching us how to replant our forests, how to grow these things sustainably so that we aren't denuding the planet of this plant genetic material, and we're continuing to use it sustainably.
I'm curious, because you had spent time, it sounds like, in a more corporate position. I have a lot of friends who, work in corporate law, and they always talk about the golden handcuffs, feeling kind of trapped in the career because they've gotten used to kind of the lifestyle. And, people have varying degrees of success of, dropping out of that. But I'm wondering, when you transitioned to really focus on something that was, closer to home, closer to the land, if you can talk a little bit about things that were a particular challenge to you. And I'm also curious if there's anything you maybe miss a little bit. I mean, and by way of example, I definitely do my best to, eat food that I know where the source has come from. But when I was a little kid, I was obsessed with, Gushers, these like little, corn syrup candies. And I still find myself at the bodega probably once a week eating the Gushers. It's like a guilty pleasure that I'm like kind of made peace with. And I'm just wondering if you have any hangovers like that you'd be willing to share with us.
Oh, I think for my husband and I, just being able to go on vacation, or we used to live in town and just run into a movie, or going out to eat was a great luxury. And now you have a cow and chickens and things that expect to be milked and fed, and vacation is difficult without a network of people around you. It becomes very difficult to just have that, well, we're home from work tonight, and what are we going to do? We could go to a restaurant, we could go to a movie, we could go out to a concert. I think that's probably our biggest miss from the old lifestyle. We definitely made a contract with our land in an old-fashioned way, where we are working to preserve it and working to do with it what it needs, and we are also expecting it to support us. And it's a different contract than you make in a corporate world. I definitely didn't have any hesitation stepping out of that corporate world, but there was definitely a, yeah, it's tempting, the paycheck and the freedom and the things that you have in that world, being able to count on money coming in all the time. It's a different living by faith that I have now, and we do miss some of that.
Yeah. Now, speaking of that, you know, kind of network, that community, you guys are in Marysville, Ohio. I'm curious, are you kind of one of many operations that are of this similar vein, or are you more of, you know, a single player on that scene?
We're a single player. We're kind of an oddity. In our community, there just aren't very many people that are homesteading, and that's something that we would love to see changed. More people who have a single-family cow or a few chickens, just being able to, like I said, for vacation, just being able to say, we're going to go away, and the cow needs milked twice a day. Finding somebody who knows how to do that or is interested in the milk or the eggs. We haven't been able to set up a network yet. I do have apprentices now. I teach the herbal. It's part of our farm diversification is I do a lot of teaching on the farm, and I have apprentices for sustainable family herbalism, and that helps. They're now able to help us when we go away, when we travel.
And you guys also host dinners on the farm. Can you tell me about those?
We do. We host dinners that are they're around the moons. So a lot of times you hear in our culture, more in the foodie culture, we're hearing we want to know where our food comes from. We want to have a relationship with our farmer. But I find that we're not having conversations about where our medicine comes from, and that's just as important. We should know our farmer in that aspect as well. And when we talk about homesteading, we should be growing our own food and medicine. So these farm dinners, we do believe that people come at it at the dinner table. I think a lot of times I want to encourage people to add dandelion root or burdock root to their food for the health-giving properties, and I want them to eat it and enjoy it, but that's a foreign concept unless I can serve it to them and show them how delicious it can be and how not bizarre. So we do these farm dinners around the full moons in the way that agriculture named the full moons based on what was going on at that time of year. And we theme each of the meals to teach people to reconnect to the land, to reconnect to themselves, to reconnect to their community at the table.
That sounds awesome. If people want to find out, people who are in the Columbus area, like my sister, wants to come out for a workshop or a dinner, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, all of our information is on our website. It's www.mockingbirdmeadows.com. And they can also read about our new nonprofit foundation, Bees First, which we are working to teach our beekeeping methods as well as the herbalism out, because we had 100% bee survival this year, and we're keeping our bees very differently, and it's how we are going to grow sustainably in our business. So everything can be accessed at our website.
Awesome. Dawn, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate having you on.
Well, thank you for having me.
For folks who want to find out more about homesteading and some of the other winners from this year's 2013 awards, definitely check them out at www.MotherEarthNews.com. I want to send a quick thank you to Brandy Ernson, who helped me set up the interviews for today. And definitely tune in next week for another episode of the Farm Report. This show, like all 30 of our live weekly programs, are available for free as a download through Stitcher Smart Radio, iTunes, or our website. We are a nonprofit, member-supported organization, so if you believe in what we're doing, we would appreciate your support. Click that Donate tab and become a member today.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Today's program has been brought to you by Consider Bardwell Farm, the first cheese-making co-op in Vermont. For more information, visit www.considerbardwellfarm.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. What's hot at the Green Market? You're about to find out now. It's the Grow NYC Market Update.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to the Grow NYC Market Update. We are on the line with Carolyn from Grow NYC's Green Markets. Where are we heading today?
Hey, Erin. Today we're going to check out our Sunnyside Market in Queens. Every Saturday from June through December, our farmers set up there on a shady tree-lined avenue near Lulu Dottie Park. And I recently learned that Queens is the most diverse urban area in the world, which is awesome. And our Sunnyside Market certainly reflects this. Over the years, it has developed into a thriving part of the community that draws an ethnically diverse mix of young folks, families, and elderly residents from the surrounding neighborhood.
Awesome. Well, what farmers or producers should we be looking for at the market?
Yeah, Sunnyside is the kind of market where you can pretty much get all of your shopping done for the week. So I would definitely suggest bringing a cart or a basket or a ton of reusable bags. Highlights include specialty Mexican produce and herbs from several of our farmers, multi-ethnic artisan breads and tortillas from Hot Bread Kitchen, and some fresh fish from American Seafood. I always love getting tips from the folks at Rising Sun Farm on how to cook their grass-fed beef, while shoppers always love Cheryl Rogowski's certified naturally grown veggies and Goodale Farms milk and dairy. And then, of course, this time of year, Breezy Hill and Toygo Orchards have stands that are just filled with tons of different apple varieties.
Nice. And I'm assuming as one of the most diverse community in the country, there's probably a ton of other great stuff to check out when we're in the area. What would you recommend?
Definitely. Well, actually, this Saturday, if you've never been to the Sunnyside Market before or if you're a regular, this Saturday, September 28th, would be the perfect time to visit because we're partnering with Queens County Market to put on a fall harvest celebration. So Queens County Market's mission is to connect Queens communities with local food businesses and to champion and strengthen the local food industry in Queens. And they do this by organizing pop-up markets around the borough that feature a rotating group of local and diverse culinary entrepreneurs. So this Saturday at the Sunnyside Market, your favorite farmers will be joined by Buenos Angies. They'll have some Argentinian cookies, bittersweet NYC with samosas and some sweet confections, native coffee roasters with fair trade coffee roasted at Astoria, and ice and vice with some really unique flavors of ice cream and sorbet. So there'll be live music, a pumpkin patch, and a bunch of fun family-friendly activities. So we're getting pretty creative with our space here, which is really exciting, and we're doing it in a way that will really build community by connecting the market to the neighborhood and to other people that are doing interesting stuff with food, and of course, continuing to further our mission of supporting local farmers.
Awesome. Well, I know that you also have a ton of other great events coming up, so maybe you can give us a couple of the highlights.
Yeah, definitely. This Saturday as well at Union Square, there will be a book signing with Liz Newmark. She's the author of Sylvia's Table. Also, next Wednesday, October 2nd, is National Kale Day. So we'll be celebrating with the authors of 50 Shades of Kale, Jen Isserlo and Dr. Jooms Ramsey at Union Square. And then chefs from the New York City School of Food will be serving kale salad at the Astoria Market, at our Barclays Market, at Bartel Pritchard Square in Brooklyn, and at our Tribeca Market. And then in the evening, on that same day, on Wednesday, October 2nd, we'll be hosting an Educated Eater panel. We'll be discussing regional farming in a changing climate, and that's at the Woolman Hall at the New School. So you can visit grownyc.org/greenmarket/events to get all the details about those.
Awesome. Thanks so much for taking some time out to give us such a great update.
Yeah, no problem, Erin. Have a great week.
You too. So for folks who want to get a recap of that rundown, you can find out more about what's happening at the Green Markets by visiting www.grownyc.org/ourmarket. There you'll get all the info on cooking demos, book signings, giveaways, and more. Also, feel free to follow them on your favorite social media stream, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, whatever floats your boat. There's lots of great pics and news there as well. So, of course, you'll want to mark your calendar next Thursday for another episode of the Grow NYC Market Update. Hang tight. Up next, we have Everything's on the Table.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.